This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro. Each night, we are here to answer your questions.
Hey there.
Hey, this is Vince from the Wild Black Podcast out of Atlanta, Georgia.
This is Jared from Washington State.
This is Kara.
My name is Paul.
I want to do something to help out while I'm sheltering in place.
And my question is about...
My question is...
And I have a medical-related question.
What advice do you have for married couples who want to create space but also remain close?
What we can do for the grocery store workers.
Can I get the corona from handling money?
Is this because of natural immunity?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tonight, we have NPR journalists and outside experts joining us from all over the world to offer facts and guidance and to correct some of the misinformation that is floating around. Tonight, we've got answers to your questions about ways to give back, dating during a pandemic, and an epidemiologist tackles your questions about the virus itself. Send us your questions and tell us how you're coping at npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation. Each night, we begin by answering the question, what happened today? Well, around the world, there are now more than a million cases and about 60,000 deaths from COVID-19. Nearly 600 people in New York died yesterday. Governor Andrew Cuomo is sending the National Guard to collect ventilators from less populated areas and bring them to New York City.
Am I willing to deploy the National Guard and inconvenience people for several hundred lives? You're damn right I am.
Beyond New York, Dr. Deborah Birx says the coronavirus task force is watching other areas closely.
The Chicago area, the Detroit area, and have some developing concerns around Colorado, the District of Columbia, and Pennsylvania.
Globally, Spain just recorded nearly 1,000 deaths in 24 hours. Germany has changed its guidance on masks, encouraging people to wear them in public. And there have been confirmed COVID-19 cases in all but two countries in Africa. In the U.S., the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has reversed course. They are now recommending that people wear masks in public. President Trump made the announcement tonight.
Really a voluntary thing. You can do it. You don't have to do it. I'm choosing not to do it, but some people may want to do it, and that's okay.
The CDC is asking the public not to use surgical masks or masks like the N95 in order to save them for medical personnel. Dr. Anthony Fauci explained on Fox News how masks can help.
The virus can actually be spread even when people just speak, as opposed to coughing and sneezing. The better part of valor is that when you're out and you can't maintain that 6-foot distance, to wear some sort of facial covering.
Well, joining us now to answer your questions are NPR Senior Science Editor Maria Godoy and Dr. Karen Jacobson, Associate Professor at Boston University School of Medicine, specializing in infectious diseases. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Maria, will you start by telling us about this new instruction from the CDC that people should wear masks in public? President Trump yesterday suggested that a scarf could work. What kind of face covering is helpful and what should people be wearing?
So actually what the CDC is not saying is wear a mask. They're recommending people wear cloth face coverings when they go out in public. And the reason is that, you know, as we've said, masks are in critically short supply and everyone agrees that healthcare workers absolutely need them the most. They're the ones in close contact with infected people, so they're the ones at most at risk. But interesting thing is that this recommendation doesn't actually give much guidance on what type of cloth to use or how to make these coverings. But remember, the reasoning behind the recommendation is not to protect the person wearing the face covering. It's actually to protect other people from you, because there's growing evidence that people who are infected but not showing symptoms are still spreading the virus to others. So Some kind of face covering may help keep your germs from infecting other people. Now, the other thing is this recommendation is not mandatory. It's voluntary, and it's really targeted at people who live in hot zones where there are a lot of known cases. Although NPR has learned that some people at the CDC wanted the recommendation to apply everywhere because we don't know exactly where the virus is.
And the White House pushed back on that desire by the CDC, according to NPR's reporting tonight. Now, why did it take the CDC so long to make this recommendation when wearing masks is so widespread in other countries like China and South Korea?
Because as much as we want it to be, the evidence just really isn't clear cut on masks, especially when it comes to cloth masks or face coverings. There's really, really very little evidence that these can protect the wearer or even stop the spread of germs from the wearer. And so scientists have also been concerned for a long time that wearing any kind of mask can give people a false sense of security. So you might get lax about hand washing or social distancing. And that's actually why tonight we heard a lot of the doctors on the White House task force emphasizing that if you decide to wear a face covering, it has to be in addition to all these other measures. You have to keep washing your hands. You have to keep social distancing. It's a cumulative effect. These measures all have to work together to help slow the spread of the coronavirus.
Both and not either or. Let's take a listener question now about COVID-19. This is from Rick in Conway, Arkansas.
I have a medical-related question. For people who have the virus and have no or very minimal symptoms, is this because of natural immunity, their physical condition, or something else?
Sounds like a good question for Dr. Jacobson. What can you tell us about why different people are reacting so differently to this virus?
Hi, yes. So that's something I think we're all eagerly trying to figure out, and we're trying to figure out exactly what are the patterns that indicate that people are most at risk. What we're basing stuff off now is really our population or cohort evaluation, sort of looking at who has gotten more sick versus less sick. And the biggest signal so far has clearly been age, and that's something I think we've talked about for a while, that we're very fortunate so far. Younger people, particularly children or people under 20, seem to have this more minimal reaction, even though it's clear they do get infected. And that as you get older, particularly as you get older in your 60s, 70s, 80s, the likelihood of getting more severe disease goes way up.
So that's something that scientists are still researching, the reason why that is.
Yes. So it may be differences in the immune system. It may be that we're seeing more comorbidities like lung disease, heart disease, diabetes in this age group. But it's definitely something we're still trying to figure out. I think the other piece that's been interesting is that healthcare workers have been more severely affected at younger ages. So there may be also a dose related that if people get a lot of exposure, they're going to react to this differently. But in general, we know that people of all ages can get sick or have minimal sickness. And so the best thing to do is not to try to guess ahead of time exactly which category you'll fall in.
Okay. Our next question comes from John in Ashby, Massachusetts, who asks, how effective is UVC lighting in killing the virus? That's something I had not heard of. Dr. Jacobson, can UV light help kill this disease?
So there's different kinds of UV light. There's currently projects going on to use UVC light to decontaminate some of the masks that healthcare providers use in hospital settings or some of the equipment. And that seems to actually be pretty effective. And certainly with our current shortages, it's an exciting avenue to go down. The thing is that UVC is not very safe on the skin, or it's not very safe to individuals' eyes. And so it's not like we can start just lighting our homes or our spaces and not then have other damage to ourselves.
Right.
But it definitely is exciting to see that we might be able to reuse and sterilize equipment this way.
I want to let listeners know that if they have questions for Dr. Jacobson and NPR's Maria Godoy, you can submit them by going to npr.org/nationalconversation or use the hashtag NPRConversation. And we have another question here from Margan in Lawrence, Kansas. Here it is.
I'm wanting to do something to help my elderly neighbors and friends with compromised immune systems. Is it okay to take them homemade baked goods or meals? What are the risks and recommended best practices for doing so?
We're getting so many questions along these lines from listeners who want to help but don't want to inadvertently spread this disease. Dr. Jacobson, what's your guidance?
Yeah, so this one is a tricky one. I mean, we know that for the most part, coronavirus or COVID-19 gets transmitted in multiple ways, either direct contact, that's why we try to do social distancing, respiratory droplets, so like sneezes, coughs, or even talking or breathing. But I think for this, the concern is these fomites. So these are the things that can also get on the surfaces when you're giving other people gifts. And so the best advice right now is, as sweet as it is to make something in your home, we don't know what your infectious risk is currently, and so it would probably be safer to be giving gifts from restaurants or settings where things are more controlled at a safety level, or buying sort of prepackaged goods rather than, unfortunately, making things in your home.
Another question about whether the virus can survive on surfaces comes from Rita in Fort Lauderdale, who asks, can the coronavirus survive on and be contracted from surfaces in nature, like grass and trees? And if so, for how long? Maria Godoy, what do we know about the virus surviving in the great outdoors?
not a lot. We don't really know how long this virus survives on a lot of surfaces. You know, and environmental scientists tell me generally wouldn't test like the tree bark or leaves because they tend to be more concerned about water and soil contamination. But if you think about it, common sense, we know there's a lot of air circulation outside. So that air is going to help disperse viral particles that are out there. There is like a tiny hypothetical chance that if someone were outside and, I don't know, sneezed on a leaf and then an hour later you happen to go by and touch the same leaf, you could get infected. But it's really a really tiny chance and it's very hypothetical. And that's why we're supposed to be hand washing and hand sanitizing all the time.
Right.
I'd say I'd say your bigger concern is like to keep your distance from other people out there enjoying the outdoors.
And just in our last minute, Dr. Jacobson, we got a question from Gerent in Washington State asking whether paper money and coins are a risk. Are they potential vectors for this disease? Briefly, what would you tell them?
I think very similar to what we've already mentioned already, that there is some risk that these viruses can get on paper money, but it's probably the same risk as if you were signing a pad, if you put your credit card through. The best practice is just to give the money and then wash your hands afterwards.
All right. Dr. Karen Jacobson of Boston University School of Medicine and NPR Senior Science Editor Maria Godoy, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ari.
And up next, we answer your questions on dating during this global pandemic. Stay with us. This is The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.